Thank you very much, and thank you for attending this symposium and listening to all of the speakers. It's been some great talks. I would like to acknowledge my co-authors on this paper. You just heard from Juan. Juan is a co-author along with Jennifer Reeve, both at Utah State University in Logan. Amaya Atucha is at the University of Wisconsin in Madison, and Lori Hoagland is at Purdue University in West Lafayette. Our charge in terms of this paper was to discuss or is to discuss soils and human health in the context of organic farming. And I would like to acknowledge at the outset that there is a long-held belief among many people in a link between the soils, plants, and food health, and by extension, human health. And I think this was expressed quite eloquently by Hippocrates. Let food be thy medicine, and medicine thy food. Now, certainly since the time of Hippocrates, many people have held to the belief that there is a link between soils and ultimately human health. But I don't think we've heard that expressed quite as eloquently since Hippocrates did it, or perhaps not as explicitly or as often as we've moved into the current or modern era. With possibly one exception, as we've looked into the modern era, those who are proponents of organic farming have continued to speak very passionately about a link between soils and soil quality and human health. Folks like Lady Balfour, Lord Northmorne, Jerome Rodale, and others have talked about this link. And they've also talked just as passionately about their belief that the best way to enhance soil health, soil quality, and human health is to adopt organic farming methods, what we call today organic farming methods. Interestingly, there are some recent meta-analyses that support this belief. Some of these meta-analyses have indicated that food crops, foods grown organically, contain higher levels of antioxidants, and conversely, lower levels of pesticide residues than food grown conventionally. Food grown organically in some instances has been safer or is safer to eat and is fresher than food grown conventionally. Well, let's assume for just a couple minutes that there is a link between soil and food quality. If that is the case, then there certainly is a wealth of published literature indicating that soil quality is enhanced following adoption of organic farming methods. Now, certainly this is not an exhaustive list up here, but I think what this list does do is point out or make a couple important points. When you look at where some of those papers have been published, premier scientific journals. I've never been blessed with having anything published in Science, and I'm not holding my breath that I will, but some of this has appeared in Science. And also, and I know many of you, or at least some of you in the audience, are familiar with this research. It's not unique to a particular country. I mean, some of it's been conducted here in the U.S. Some of it's been conducted in Canada. Some of this research that is summarized in these papers has been conducted in Europe and really globally. So this link between adoption of organic farming methods and soil quality is pretty well established in the literature, and it's global in nature. Now, why is there this improvement in soil quality following adoption of organic farming methods? This research is ongoing. Some researchers have focused on the impact of pesticides versus organic inputs on the microbial community, the soil microbial community. Certainly, there's no consensus, I don't believe, that's been reached in the scientific literature on what impact these inputs do have, if there is an impact. But really, interestingly, when you look at consensus in the scientific literature on the impact of adoption of organic farming on soil quality, there actually isn't a consensus either. There are some researchers who suggest that, in fact, what they have found is there really is no impact following adoption of organic farming methods on soil quality. And what they suggest, and this is really what the focus of my presentation, my brief presentation is going to be, is that there are some confounding factors when organic and conventional systems are compared. And in many cases, they suggest that it's the cropping practices that may explain the differences in soil quality and not any management intrinsic in organic farming per se. So what I'd like to do now for the next few minutes is just pull out or briefly talk about some of the comparisons that have been made in a few of the studies that have been published. And I've selected just a couple studies, not because they're my favorite studies, but because they're very well designed, very well accepted among scientists working in this area, and they're conducted by very well-established and respected scientists. I mean, this is good science that I'm going to briefly touch on. Now, John Teasdale and others conducted research at the USDA Beltsville facility and summarized what they found after 9 years in one study. And among other things, they found that soil organic carbon concentrations were higher in an organic system compared to conventional systems. And as we heard just a few minutes ago, if you were in this a session, soil organic carbon is suggested by some to be, if you had to pick one indicator, the indicator in terms of soil health. Well, let's take a look at what those systems that were being compared. There were four systems in this particular study. Three of them were conventional, what we would call conventional, where synthetic inputs were used. All were under no-till management, and then you had the organic system. So the first conventional system was a corn followed or corn or maize followed by a wheat or soybean or a wheat soybean double crop. Synthetic fertilizer was applied prior to the corn phase to provide nutrient needs based on soil test results. The second system was a corn soybean system rotation with cover crops represented in that system. Hairy vetch before the corn phase, a rye went awry before the soybean phase. Synthetic fertilizer was applied to provide nutrient needs prior to the corn phase, but at a reduced rate. The third system, conventional system, a no-till system again. This, they tweaked the rotation a little bit. They began with that corn, then followed by wheat or soybean or wheat-soybean double crop system for the first several years, and then moved to a corn-wheat rotation for the last 5 years. They also had a cover crop represented in that system. In this case, it was the perennial crown vetch, living mulch. Synthetic fertilizer was applied again. The fourth system was the organic system. You can see the rotation, corn followed by wheat or soybean or wheat-soybean double crop for the first 4 years. And then a more diverse rotation, a little bit more diverse, a three-year rotation, corn followed by soybean followed by wheat. Cover crops were in that system as well as you would expect in an organic system. A crimson clover, in this case, planted prior to the corn. One difference, obviously they can't use synthetic fertilizer inputs, so dairy manure was used to provide nutrient needs in that system. What do we know about manure? Well, manure is a good source of nutrients, but we know it also does some magnificent things to our soil that synthetic fertilizer just cannot do. And this has always been one of my favorite papers. It kind of dates me a little bit. Several years ago in an agronomy journal, Jenkinson published research where they summarized some work done at Rothamsted in England. And in this study, you know, we talk about long-term studies still in the U.S., 20, 30 years. You know, this was over 100 years, several years ago. What you see in that line graph, to your right is along the y-axis, that's micrograms of soil organic carbon per hectare, and along the x-axis is years. And what the lines represent, the dotted line is plots in this study, where this was a barley production study, plots in this study where no manure had ever been applied. That dashed line represents soil organic carbon levels in plots where manure was applied from 1852 to 1871 and then discontinued over the next 100 years. And then that solid line represented soil organic carbon levels in plots where manure had been applied fairly consistently. Now, just look and compare, though, the soil organic carbon levels in plots where manure had been applied until 1872 and then discontinued over the next 100 years. That's that dashed line, represented by that dashed line, versus plots where manure had never been applied, represented by that dotted line. Look at the legacy effect. 100 years after that manure had been discontinued, soil organic carbon levels were still elevated in those plots versus plots where manure had ever been applied. Well, when we go back to the study that John and others published, is it a surprise that the organic system had higher levels of soil organic carbon when manure had been applied in that system and not in the other system? You know, there are reasons why they chose the treatments that they did, but does it maybe have more to do with the fact that manure was used in the organic system and not in the conventional system versus the fact that we were comparing an organic versus conventional systems? It's confounding. It's very well established in the literature that diverse rotations that include green manure crops along with forages enhance soil quality. It's pretty well established in the literature. Okay, so now let's look at a couple other studies. Now, that Bessel study is a study that I just talked about that John and others published work on. And again, these are good researchers, well-designed studies, and they're good reasons why they select the systems that they've got and the crops that they've got. But two additional studies, Arlington, Wisconsin, and Greenfield, Iowa, very good scientists, Josh Posner, God bless his soul, an excellent scientist, and Kathleen Dellett and Cindy Camberdella, great scientists. But let's look at the Arlington study first, and let's focus on the grain systems. Both systems and this Wisconsin study do have a grain crop with forages, and I'm not really going to focus on that, but let's look at the comparison of the grain systems. Okay, in the conventional system, as we move from top down, one is continuous corn, so a corn monoculture, a maize monoculture, and then a corn-soybean rotation. The other system has the organic system. Those two conventional systems are being compared to the organic system. The organic system is a corn followed by soybean, followed by, so it's a three-year rotation, wheat plus clover green manure. So it's got a green manure in it, and it's a more diverse rotation than the systems that are in the conventional strategy. Okay. Similarly, if we go down to Iowa, it's got a long-term study, there's a corn-soybean managed conventionally versus two organic systems. In both cases, the organic systems have forages, alfalfa represented, that's what the alpha is, alfalfa, and they're more diverse systems. So it really is confounding. Among other things, what is happening is we're comparing diverse rotations that include forages to under conventional management, systems that are less diverse. And it's pretty well established in the literature that as you have diverse systems with green manure crops and forages, soil quality tends to be enhanced. I'm not knocking these comparisons. I think we need to acknowledge, though, that there's confounding factors, and we cannot tease out the impact of rotational diversity and use of green manures versus the fact that it's being managed organically versus conventionally. I guess that's my point. Okay, so let's return. Are there any other confounding factors? Crop cultivar selection. This has been talked about for several years. It's now quite well established in the literature, and there's, again, some excellent scientists who have done this kind of thing. You know, even within a crop species like wheat, we know that there are some cultivars or varieties that naturally are predisposed to have higher nutrient contents than other varieties. And I think we all, for those of us who work in crop production, we know that we really have bred over the last several decades for yield. And maybe sometimes at the expense of some other things that we're starting to recognize. Well, in some of the comparisons where we're looking at organic versus conventional systems, the cultivars are different. And, you know, we have to be careful that we're not biasing one system over the other by having in one system, which sometimes is the organic system, cultivars that are naturally higher in nutrients than the cultivars used in the conventional system. Again, it confounds the comparison. Are we comparing the systems, or are we comparing cultivars that are naturally higher in nutrients versus cultivars that are naturally lower. We also know in terms of fruit stock, now I'm not a fruit person, but this is what I've been told, management has a big impact or can have a big impact on food quality. In terms of fruit crops, rootstock selection, the pruning method that is used, the training systems that are used can impact food quality. And in some instances anyway, when we're comparing organic versus conventional systems, those are not held constant across those systems. So, we do have some research recommendations. Now that we've been doing these comparisons for many, many years, we need to, at least in particular as new studies come online, we need to maybe spend a little more attention in terms of experimental design and protocol. Maybe it doesn't always make sense to use the same cultivars in the organic system that we use in the conventional system. But let's do everything that we can as researchers to design systems where the cultivars that are used in the organic system, if they tend to be a little bit higher in nutrient concentration, are reflected somewhat in the cultivars used in the conventional system, which also tend to be a little bit higher in nutrient concentration. Crop rotation. We recognize the value that diverse crop rotations have on soil quality, and that can translate into food quality and human health. So if we're going to use a diverse rotation in an organic system, if it's not the same diverse rotation, let's at least make sure we have a diverse rotation used in the conventional system. We're presently at North Dakota, my wife and I, and I can tell you farmers there, the conventional farmers, are using diverse rotations. Not all of them, but a lot of them are. And it is no longer true that in a place like Western North Dakota, we're just seeing growers growing wheat. That's not true. That's never been true among the organic farmers, but it's no longer true among the conventional farmers. In terms of cover crops, and particularly manure, again, let's not bias comparisons by including things that we know are going to impact soil quality over and above some other factors. Again, in Western North Dakota anyway, a lot of the farming systems are diverse. The conventional farmers as well as the organic farmers have livestock and crop enterprises represented on their farm. Now, I know it's unique. Now, a lot of environments don't have that, but I can tell you from working with the conventional farmers, they apply manure to their land, just like the organic farmers do. Not just like, but I mean, they both do it. And finally, and I'll be the first to admit this, these are very complex comparisons. I think we need to do all we can to involve statisticians in not just analyzing the data, but in the planning of these systems. Sometimes they can help us better design the studies to make sure we're not confounding or biasing one system over the other. just to make you aware, Jennifer Reeve is really taking the lead on here, and there are additional authors involved, but Jennifer's done a really good job of really trying to write a paper, not that others have done it, but to write a paper that's very, very current, kind of giving us the state of the art in terms of linking organic farming to soil health and food quality. And we're doing our best to try to get this thing published. If you're interested, look for it. Hopefully it'll be published in the next year and a half, something like that. So thanks very much for your time.